We're holding Memches Samad Aleph, followed by the Mishnah, the first Mishnah. Mishnah says, Arba Asa Shachaldias for Shabbos. If the 14th of Nisan, so Erev Pesach, comes out on Shabbos, it's going to be this year, three months from now, we have just that. So what do you do as far as getting rid of the Chametz? Mevarin Asakom, Lifnei Shabbos, give it a mayor. So the mayor says, whether Cholin or Truma, you have to get rid of everything before Shabbos. Now Rashi says, decide what you plan to eat on Shabbos. But in other words, given that given that you have to do beer chametz of most of it, then don't leave a lot of chametz for Shabbos. Leave over only what you plan to eat for Shabbos and get rid of everything before Shabbos. Even now, you might take the view, as we're going to have. We're going to have Rebbe Eliezer, Rebbe Tzadik, and the Chachamim saying that at least, Rebbe Eliezer, Rebbe Tzadik saying at least Truma, that Cholin at least you could save a lot of for Shabbos, because Cholin it's easy to find people that are going to eat it. The mayor says no. You actually have some Rishonim at the end of the first Perek of Armas in the Rif, at the end of the first Perek of Armasef, you have the Bala Mor, the Raivad, the Ran, all discuss, they mention some Rishonim learn, the Bala Mor himself, for example, learns this way, that what Meir actually means is you have to get rid of everything, as in you can't even leave over any chametz to eat on Shabbos. You would have to get rid of all your chametz before Shabbos, according to him, and on Shabbos, Erev Pesach, you would have to eat matzah. Usually you're not supposed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach, but this, according to him, this would have to be an exception. One possible reason for that is if he holds, like we learned in the previous perek that Rabbi Yehuda holds, ein bir chametz el sreifa, that the only valid way to be mekayim the mitzvah of bir chametz is burning, well, you can't do that on Shabbos. So according to that understanding, according to the Balamara's understanding, and some other Rishonim that I mentioned over there, Rav Meir means that actually, literally, you're not allowed to leave any chametz for Shabbos. Not even, like Rashi says, what you're going to eat on Shabbos.
Matashir,
maybe according to him, yeah. The Chum say, no, you get rid of everything in its proper time on Shabbos morning, meaning the pashtus, you can leave over as much as you want, and then whatever you have left after you finish eating, you'll have to give to a goy or feed to an animal or flush down the toilet or whatever. Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Tzadik Trumam Lifnei Shabbos for Cholin Bizmano. Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Tzadik says it depends whether we're talking about Truma or Cholin. Truma you have to get rid of before Shabbos because you have much fewer people that can eat it. Zorim can't eat it. Their animals can't eat it. So therefore, get rid of all of it before Shabbos, any chametz of Truma, because you're not going to be able to do anything with it on Shabbos. As opposed to Cholin, you can wait until Shabbos morning and then get rid of what's left.
In reality, if you go to the sort of big dumpster, it's hefker. It's not money anymore.
So if you throw it into a big dumpster, maybe that would be a public dumpster. Maybe. I mean, it also has to be, I mean, you you can be mevatel chametz d'arais also, but, you know, you have to consider whether there's d'rabbanan, you know, but that's why flushing it down the toilet is effective. I think, for example, we'll talk about in Shulchan Aruch the same way. For example, you can throw it on the ground and people will step on it with your feet or whatever. So throwing it into a dumpster, maybe that would be a similar thing.
Right.
I mean, on Shabbos morning, you can't do that anyway unless there's a neighbor.
Right. But my parents have a big dumpster.
Okay. So according to Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Tzadik, there's a difference between Truma and Cholin, So the Gemara gives a story about that. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Tzadik, says to give a proof for what he's saying, that some of it you're allowed to keep on Shabbos. Pamachas Shavas Abba B'Yavne. One time my father, Rabbi Tzadik, spent Shabbos in Yavne. V'chala ba osadiyas b'Shabbos. Erev Pesach came out on Shabbos. Zunin, who was in charge of the household of Ram Gamliel, so he's like the Masharis, like the Mashbak over there, you could say. He said it's time to get rid of the Chametz. I followed my father and we got rid of the Chametz. So we see, in other words, first of all, not like Rav Meir that you have to get rid of everything before Shabbos. And if we say like the Bala Mur's understanding of Rav Meir, then Rav Elazar Tzadik is proving that you see, you don't have to get rid of everything because you see the still chametz to get rid of Shabbos morning. If you say, like Rashi's understanding of Rav Meir, that even Rav Meir allows you to leave some over for Shabbos, then the chiddush is that he used the expression hidia es levar as a chametz, meaning it's time to get rid of the chametz, as if like this is the main time to get rid of it, not like Rav Meir saying the main time to get rid of it is on Erev Shabbos, and just whatever you happen to have left is left over for Shabbos. The expression hidia es levar as a chametz implies before now there was no time when you had to get rid of chametz, not like Rav Meir. So, in other words, that's the thing. You're allowed to keep as much as you want of cholin for Shabbos because you can always find people to eat cholin. And whatever you have left, yeah, you have to get rid of. But you wouldn't use on that the expression, higia eis levirus achametz. You would just say, let's be mevire whatever's left or whatever. So therefore, it shows that you're allowed to keep as much as you want, not like a mayor. Lamaisa, the halacha is like a mayor, that you have to get rid of as much as possible for Shabbos and keep only muzen shtei sodas for Shabbos, and then you eat that, and then you flush down the rest or whatever. So one interesting question in that is, so when you're doing the bir chametz on Erev Pesach, it's on Erev Pesach, on Friday, your gimel, instead of usually you would do it the morning of your dalad, do you have to do it at the same time as you would the rest of the year? There are Rishonim who say that no. And in fact, they say that's another point, is even Rav Meir is just saying you have to get rid of it lifnei HaShabbos, which could imply right before Shabbos. So you could go until almost Shvia and then only get rid of it. So on the other hand, some Rishonim say that no, you should still do it at the same time as you would every other year, because otherwise in another year, you're going to get confused. You're going to think that you have until the end of the day. And this year you do, because not yet Erev Pesach, but in another year, you're going to make that mistake. And that is the accepted halacha. That's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. So therefore, so we do Bedikas Chametz on Thursday night instead of, we can't do it Friday night, obviously. We do bir chametz, we burn the chametz at the regular time of Sosman bir chametz. We do that on Friday, Yud Gimel Nissen. We don't say kol chamira at that point, because we're not being mevatel the rest of our chametz, because we want to keep some for Shabbos. And then Shabbos morning, when it comes the time of bir chametz, we get rid of whatever's left by flushing it down the toilet or whatever. And then at that point, well, we eat whatever we can, and we flush whatever's left, whatever. And then we say kol chamira.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, well, last time it happened was 13 years ago. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mishnah says, Ha'hoylech lishchet es pischoy, if a person is going to shecht his korban Pesach, the lomol asbroi, who is going to make a bris milah for his son, we're talking about on Erev Pesach, the lechol sudas erosin reveis chomiv, or he's going to eat at an erosin party at his father-in-law's house. Erosin is the first stage of marriage. You have erosin, which is also called kiddushin, and then nisuin. And the minhag in those days was that, now nowadays we do the erosin and the nisuin together, both under the chuppah. But in those times they used to do them a year apart. So erosin meant kiddushin. Kesef shtar ubiya. So kesef, let's say, giving her the ring when we have now. The chassan puts the ring on the kala's finger and says, "Hareyat mekudeshes li." That's erusin. At that point, they're considered married lahalacha to the extent that they would need a get if they wanted to get divorced, and if she's mezaneh and she's chayiv misa, etc., etc. The only thing is they're not allowed to have relations yet until nisuin, which is chuppah, no yichud, right? Now, nowadays we do the both things together, but in those days they did them generally a year apart. And the minhag was that after the erusin, they would have a suda at the kala's house, at her parents' house, and the chosin would come and all his friends would come and whatever. So that's the sudas erusin. So a person is going for any one of these things, which is a mitzvah. And we're going to discuss in the Gemara the details about which sodas erusin is and isn't a mitzvah. We're going to see about that. That's going to get into a discussion in the Gemara. And then that's going to lead into a long piece of Agadta. Yeah. So in any case, the nizka sheyesh lechametz pesach pesach. Now he remembers on the way when he's going to shecht his korban pesach or do the milah or go to the sodas erusin, he remembers that he has chametz back home. So what should he do? Im yachol lachzor levayir, if he has enough time to be able to go home, get rid of that chametz, the lachzor mitzvah, say, and then continue to his mitzvah, and he won't be late. Yachzor levayir, then he should go and do that, because then that way he's able to accomplish both mitzvahs, getting rid of the chametz and doing the mitzvah that he's going to. The im lav, and if not mevatle belibay, then it's enough if he's just mevatle in his heart, because midaraisa, after all, bittul was enough. It's only midrabanan that you need. It's only midrabanan that you need beer and bittul, as we talked about at the beginning of the sefer. So here, where he's not able to make it in time, if he goes back to get rid of the chametz, then he's not going to have enough time. Then he's going to be too late to do the mitzvah. Then he's allowed to just be mevatel it and continue on his way. One thing it says in Shulchan Aruch, this is all only if we're talking before the sixth hour of the day, when he still has the ability to be mevatel it. If this is taking place after the sixth hour of the day, when he has no ability to be mevatel anymore, because then it's not his, then he actually does have to go back and be mevatel. Oh, get rid of it, however it is. Yeah, because otherwise it's Oibran body, you're all by muscle.
Because the bracha, him saying it doesn't help because it's not his really, but the
bracha. That's the point. Saying kol hamira at that point is not going to help because it's not his. But burning it, yeah, he still has a mitzvah to burn it. Same. So then.
Just speaking about a regular
person. A regular person, yeah. Not Shabbos at a Pesach. No. Now we're talking about a regular Pesach. So if not, right. So if it's before the sixth hour, then he can be mevatel it. If it's after the sixth hour, since he can't be mevatel it, then he does have to go back. Although I think it says that maybe if in fact he's not going to have time to do the mitzvah, then maybe there's other rules. I don't remember that point. Okay. Anyway, on the other hand, lahatzel mina. Now, what if he's traveling in order to save Jews who are being attacked by Goyim, or because there's a river that flooded and he needs to save people, or from robbers, or from a fire, or from a collapsed building. So in all those cases, Yevatel Beliber, you should just be Mevatel in his heart, because even if there is time, because after all, you don't want him to delay in saving people, right? So actually, Shulchan Aruch points out a little bit more of a detail. I mean, if the situation is that it's not so time critical that there will be time for him to go back and be mevayer the chametz and he will go and there won't be any more danger, then fine, he should do that. But if there's even the slightest possibility that he may not be able to save as many people or whatever, if he goes back, then he should just be mevatel it and have done with it. On the other hand, the lishva is shvisa sort of shus. But if on the other hand he was traveling on Erev Pesach, to go set up a tchum for himself, where, in other words, let's say it is Shabbos Erev Pesach, and he's going, or actually, we would have to say Erev Pesach is Friday, I guess. So he's going in order to be Kaveyash a Makam Shvisa, as we learned in Erevin, that one way for a person to make himself a Makam Shvisa is to go and physically be present there at Bein HaShemashas. We didn't say it the best. We said it's one way. There's one, you could do it that way, and you could do it with food, and okay, we had a Machlokas over there, which one is the more essential one, but whatever the case, there is that way of doing it. So now, let's say he's on the way in order to do that. He wants to be Kona Shvisa in a certain place in order, and the purpose he's doing it for is for Dvar HaRashus. Let's say he wants to be able to go over and visit his friend in the next town on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. So then, Yachso Miyad, then he has to return right away. Then we say, okay, if that means that you're not going to be able to make your Erev and you're not going to be able to go visit your friend, then fine, tough luck. You still have to go. It's more important that you get rid of your chametz. On the other hand, Rashi says, if he was doing it for the sake of a mitzvah, for example, let's say there's somebody in the next town over that he wants to be Menachem Avol, or where there's a wedding over there, then it would be considered like the equivalent of a mitzvah, so we have three cases in the Mishnah. One where he's going for a Dvar Mitzvah, one where he's going to save people, and one where he's going for a Dvar HaRashus. So if it's not
a seder for all the people.
So if he's, let's say, going in order to be able to, let's say he's going as a shliach to be able to do a seder for older people, yeah, that would be an example of the Dvar Mitzvah, yeah. Yeah. We're talking about, let's say he was going just because he wants to be able to go and say hi to his friend on Yom Tov or something. Actually, Tosfos points out, we learned in Eruvin that really you're only allowed to do an Eruv in the first place, the Dvar Mitzvah. So Tosfos says Shvisa Sarashus would be, let's say, for example, he wants to go and help with Simchas Pesach in his friend or his relative's house. So it's still relatively speaking a Rashus, but it's a shtickle mitzvah, but it's not a real mitzvah like going to Shechtes Korban Pesach or whatever. So, in other words, relative to the dinim of Eruv, it can be considered Dvar Mitzvah, but relative to the importance of getting rid of his chametz, it would be considered Rashus. So therefore we have to turn around, even if that means he's not going to be able to make it. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. A similar concept applies if a person is leaving Yerushalayim, and then he realizes that he has with him meat of Kodshim, which he took along with him. Now, as soon as he left Yerushalayim, that we're talking about meat of Kodshim Kalim, like a Shlomim or a Bechor or what have you. That meat can be eaten anywhere inside the walls of Yerushalayim, but once he leaves Yerushalayim, it becomes possible. So now, like all kodshim that are possible, it has to be burnt. So what are the rules? How far, how close does he have to be, or how far can he be that he's still, that he would have to turn around and burn it in Yerushalayim versus burn it where he is? So, and Rashi points out that we learned in the previous perek that wherever something is supposed to be eaten is where it's supposed to be burnt if it became possible. So kodshim, which are supposed to be eaten in the Azara, if they become possible, they're burnt in the Azara. Kodshim Kalim, which have to be eaten in Yerushalayim. If they become fossil, they have to be burned in Yerushalayim. So how far away can he be before we say, never mind, you can just burn it where it is? So the Mishnah says, im over tsofim, if he already passed tsofim, so tsofim, Rashi says, is the name of a particular village from which you could see the Beis Hamikdash. It could be on what's now called Harat Tsofim, northeast of Yerushalayim, or it could be in some other direction. Tosfos says that actually it doesn't mean a specific place. It means any place in whatever direction that's the place where you can still see Yerushalayim and the Beis Hamikdash from it. Well, so in other words, Harat Sofim, what's now called Harat Sofim, where the Hebrew University is, and where you have that thing that was built some years back, that Mormon thing or whatever, that you have the song Yerushalayim is not for sale, is about that. All of that is northeast of Yerushalayim. So according to Rashi, we're talking either about that or some other place called Sofim, and it means if he's going in that direction, for example, then that's at that point, if he's there, you can still see the Beis Hamikdash, but beyond that already he's over the hill and he can't.
It means fast, post fast.
No, not fast. It would be actually towards the east. It would be like towards Yericho and the Yarden or whatever.
North.
Northeast. Yeah, I guess maybe towards fast also, north. But yeah, north, fast. Northeast, whatever. Yeah. But Tosfos says anyway that Sofim means more generally in any direction, wherever you are, that you can still see the Beis Hamikdash, as opposed to when you're beyond a certain point. So let's say, for example, if you're going, let's say, south of Yerushalayim, so you don't have, there's not a specific place that you can point to on a map and say, but when you're going, you can see, you start driving, let's say, and there comes a point where you can't see the Makom HaMikdash anymore. So that would be Tsofim for that purpose.
Like years ago, the Beis Hamikdash.
Yeah, obviously the Beis Hamikdash was taller, and right, you didn't have as many tall buildings, etc. Right, yeah. Anyway, so if he passed such a place, Sofer b'mekomo, then he can just burn it. Wherever he is, we're not going to be matriachim to go back. Now, Tosfos says, now Rashi had brought a pasuk to say that you have to burn it in Yerushalayim. Tosfos says it can't be Daraisa. If it was Daraisa, there'd be no difference whether you passed Sofer or not. What do you mean, we're not matriachim? The Torah says, you got to burn it. So Tosfos says that no, midaraisa you wouldn't actually need to, only midrabanan do you need to. So therefore, they're not going to be matriachim if he got too far past Yerushalayim. Actually, on Amud Beis, Rashi himself says the same thing, which leads some of the Mefoshim to say that maybe Rashi himself doesn't mean that it's an actual din daraisa. He just means what are the chachamim base themselves on. The concept of saying you should go back and burn in Yerushalayim is on this, but it's more of an asmachta. Whatever it is, anyway, so if he passed Tsofim, so then Tsofim b'mekomo, then he can burn it wherever he is, he doesn't have to go back. The imlav, but if he hasn't yet passed Sofim, chozer, he has to go back. The sofer lifnei habira, he burns it in front of the bira. There's two explanations what bira is. Tosfos brings from a gemara in Zvachim. One is that it means a specific area in the Harabais, which is called bira. The other is bira means the whole Beis Hamikdash complex, the whole Harabais. Whatever it is, he burns it in front of that, using wood that was meant to be burnt on the Ma'arocha, on the Mizbeach. The point being, the Gemara explains later on, it's not that he has to burn it over there, but if he doesn't have his own wood, and he doesn't want to have to go bother buying wood for the purpose, then he can use wood from the Beis Hamikdash, but then he has to do it right there in front of the Bira. Because we don't want him to have some of the wood left over, and he might end up doing the Ila with it. If he wants to burn it elsewhere in Yerushalayim, then fine, but then he has to supply his own wood.
Because they got from Yerushalayim to the business,
right.
To another long.
That's true, right. Okay. V'ad kama hein chozer. So it's a trade-off. You might want to not have to bother going all the way back to the Beis Hamikdash, and fine, I'll just go buy wood of my own, or I'll go use straw or something. Or you could have where I'm a traveler, I didn't bring wood with me, I don't want to use extra wood, so then I want to use wood from the Beis Hamikdash, but in that case, you have to do it by the bira. Yeah. We're going to learn about this later on in the Masechta, in the seventh Perek. We're going to talk about when you have noser from the Korban Pesach, which also can be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim. Yeah. Okay. V'ad kama hein chozrin, so how much chometz or how much b'sar kodesh do you have to have, chometz at home or b'sar kodesh with you, that you should have to turn back? Rav Meir omer zeva zeva kabetza. Rav Meir says either one, chometz or b'sar kodesh, if you have a kabetza of it. Rav Yehuda omer zeva zeva kezayis. Rav Yehuda says either way, a kezayis. So in other words, if it's less than that, if it's less than a kabeitza, according to the mayor, or less than a kezayis, according to the Yehuda, then in the case of chometz, you can be mevatalit without having to go back, even though you're only going in the first place to the bar or the shus, let's say, because it's less than a kezayis or less than a kabeitza, and therefore the chachamim are not going to be matriach you to go back. And in the case of sar kodesh, even if you haven't gotten past tzofim, you'd be allowed to burn it wherever you are, because it's not considered significant enough. So according to the mayor of Kabetza, according to the Yehuda of Kazayis, v'chum say it depends. When it comes to Bistav Kodesh, we're going to have a smaller amount of kazais. When it comes to chametz, it's a larger amount of kabeitza. For one thing, because Bistav Kodesh, you can't be mevatel it. You got to burn it. That's the din. As opposed to chametz, you have, after all, daraisa, so you could be mevatel it. So that's a reason to be mekel on it. The Rambam and the Baruch Tanura give a slightly different reason. In general, we know that kodshim are more chomer than cholin. So yeah. So the Gemara asks, Uraminu, I have a contradiction. Now you're telling me three things in the Mishnah, in the first part of the Mishnah, three things that he's going to do, where we say that if he doesn't, that if going back to burn the chametz is going to take him too far out of the way, and he's not going to get there in time, then he doesn't have to. He can be mevatel b'libui. We said three things. If he's going to shecht his korban Pesach, do a bris milah for his son, or eat a sudas erusin by his father-in-law's house. So Uraminu, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, "Ahoylech lechol sudas erusin beveis chom." If he's going to eat the sudas erusin by his father-in-law's house, the lishbis shvisas arushus, or if he's going to because he wants to be kaveya shvisa and be able to go someplace on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, either of those things, yachsum yad, he has to go back right away. In other words, both of those things are considered dvar arushus. So, what are you telling me in the Mishnah that a sudas erusin is considered a dvar mitzvah?
It's lines over here or no?
Yeah, look at the beginning of the Gemara.
Did you skip some line? No.
At the beginning of the Gemara, you're looking in the Mishnah, maybe.
Yeah.
So the Braisa is telling us that a Sudas Erosin is considered a Dvar Rishus. The Mishnah is telling us it's a Dvar Mitzvah. Which is it? That's the word. By the way, the Yerushalmi has an interesting word on it. It says, since we have in the Mishnah two things that are not only mitzvahs, but mitzvahs that if a person doesn't do them, he's chayav kares. Person doesn't bring a korban Pesach, he's chayav kares. Person doesn't have a bris milah, he's chayav kares. Then we're putting together with it a sodas erusin, which is of course not something nearly as serious as those. So the Yerushalmi says, you see from that the importance of shalom. That a sodas erusin helps promote shalom between people, between the new chassan and his father-in-law. And his in-laws and his friends come, and it promotes shalom between everybody. So you see how important that is, that the Mishnah puts the three of them together.
Just the wrong day. Yeah.
Whatever, that's the point. So that's the question, in other words. So we're saying that it's a sudas erushus. Yeah, by the way, it does mention in Shulchan Aruch that you're not supposed to be keveya suda on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov in the first place, because you have to have an appetite for the Shabbos meal, or in this case for the Seder. However, the Magen Avraham brings, and the Alter Rebbe brings this in Shulchan Aruch, that a sudas erusin is considered enough of a sudas mitzvah that it overrides that.
Base
chomer, it means his father-in-law's house.
What difference make where it's going to be?
Because that's usually where it is. That's usually where it is by his father-in-law's, where his chalal lives.
Are they made all the suddas there or not?
Yeah, that's the same. So, Amr of Yechanan, like Kasha, Hor of Yehuda, Hor of Yosef. The answer is, Rabbi Yechanan says, there's no contradiction because between the Mishnah and the Braisa, one is according to Rabbi Yehuda, one is according to Rabbi Yosef. The Tanya, Sudas Erosin Rishus Divid Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Mitzvah. Very simple. Rabbi Yehuda says that a Sudas Erosin is Rishus, so the Braisa would be appointed to him. Therefore, the guy's on his way to a Sudas Erosin, but he remembers he has chometz at home. We don't give him any dispensation. Go home and get rid of that chometz, even if it means that you're going to miss the Sudah. As opposed to, Rabbi Yosef says that it's a mitzvah, so therefore he would be the Tana of Or Mishnah, who says therefore that if you're going to be late, then you can be mevatel b'libui. However, the Gemara continues, v'hashta d'amar Rav Chista, now that we know another detail that Rav Chista said, machloikas v'sudah shniya, the whole machloikas Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yehuda is only as far as the second Sudah, meaning Rashi describes that the way it usually is you have the original Sudas Erusin in connection with the original Kiddushin, you have a first Sudah, then later on, the Chosin sends, now at some point, the Chosin sends to the Kala what's called Sivloinus. Sivloinus are presents. They could do it before the Kiddushin, in which case you have a question the Gemara discusses in Masechta Kiddushin, whether those constitute Kiddushin, or you could give them after the Kiddushin. Whatever it is, which is a simpler way of doing it, right. Whatever the case, when he sent the Sibloinus, then usually they would make another Suda. They would make another party. So now, so the Machloitus is the Suda in connection with the Sibloinus, is that considered a Sudas Mitzvah? Abel the Suda to Shona Divra Hakol Mitzvah, but when it comes to the first Suda, everybody agrees to Mitzvah. And by the way, you have Rishonim, actually, who learn, not like Rashi, that actually there are three different Sudas we're talking about. There's Suda Rishonah, then there's the Suda Shniya, in other words. So we have, after they got engaged, you still have, every so often, the Chosin goes and has a Suda by his future in-laws. And then you also have separately Suda Sivloinus. So they would learn, in other words, that Suda Shniyah is not the same as Suda Sivlonis. Okay, anyway. Now that Rav Chista pointed out that distinction, Afilu Tema Ha V'Ha Rabbi Yehuda, then both Abba V'Suda V'Shodin Dibra Hakol Mitzvah, Afilu Tema Ha V'Ha Rabbi Yehuda, now you can say, you don't need to say that the Mishnah and the Braisa are according to different Tanoim. Both the Mishnah and the Braisa could be according to Rabbi Yehuda. Well, like Kasha, Ha V'Suda V'Shodin, Ha V'Suda Shniyah, because one's talking about the first Suda and one's talking about the second, and the first one is definitely a Mitzvah, and the second one Rabbi Yehuda is saying is only Rishus.
One question. Chametz Doraisa, Sudas Mitzvah is not Doraisa.
Yes, but Midaraisa, all you need to do is be Mevatel the Chametz. It's only Dirabonan that you need to be Mevire as well as being Mevatel, right? That we learned in the first Perek. Habodik Tzorach Shivatel and all that. We talked about at the very beginning of the Masechta why you need Bedikas Chametz in the first place if Midaraisa beer is enough. If Midaraisa Bittel, I mean Bittel was enough, and we had a number of different answers about that, one of them being because you might not be Mevatel Belev Sholem, or you might find Gluska Yoffe, or all kinds of other things like that, but and because you eat chametz during the rest of the year, and therefore you may forget and eat it during Pesach, etc. But still, midaraisa, all you need is vittel. So in cases like this, where there's a mitzvah involved, then the chachamim said, in that case, never mind the takana d'rabbanan, the gzeira d'rabbanan that you need to be mevayer. In this case, you can get away with just vittel. Again, that's why we said before, this is all if we're talking about before the sixth hour on our Pesach. After the sixth hour,
yeah,
then there are other rules, because then at that point you can't be mevatel it anymore. Now the only thing you can do is be mevayer.
Right, but this mitzvah to Rabbanan is in support of a mitzvah to a Raisa, which Sudas Mitzvah is...
That's fine, but nevertheless, the Sudas Mitzvah is considered enough of mitzvah that the Chachamim are not going to impose their rule in that case. Okay. Onward. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Ani lo shamaiti ela Sudas Erisin. Rabbi Yehuda says, I only heard from my Rabbeim that it's considered a mitzvah only the actual Sudas Erisin, only the Suda they make in connection with when they first get engaged. Not really engaged is the wrong word, but you know, when they first do the Kedushin, whatever. Ava loy sivlonis, but not the Suda that they make when he's sending her presents. You should know, I heard from my Rabbeim that it applies to both the Sudas Erisin and the Sudas Sivlonis. Both of them are considered a Sudas Mitzvah. Tanya, Rav Shimon Omer, kol suda she'ena shal mitzvah, any suda, any meal that's not for a mitzvah, ein tamad chacham nashoy lohanes mimena. A tamad chacham is not allowed to have hanah from such a meal, and in fact, that would mean it's not considered a sudas mitzvah for the purposes that we were just talking about. So, kegoin mai, the Gemara asks, what's an example of a suda she'ena shal mitzvah? Amar Rav Yechanan, kegoin bas koyen li yistrol, or bas tamad chacham lama oretz. For example, if a Bas Koyin is marrying a Yisrael, or the daughter of a Tamil Chacham is marrying an Amoritz. Now, what's the problem with those? The Amar of Yechanan, Bas Koyin the Yisrael, Ein Zivugan Ola Yofer. If a Bas Koyin marries a Yisrael, the marriage is not going to work out well. Now, one second. It's not when this is the end. We're patience. We're going to talk about details in this, right? Maihi, now what do we mean? In what sense is it not going to work out well? Amar Rav Chista, so Rav Chista says, al derech like you have in the Pasuk, where it mentions the case where Bas Koyin marries Yisrael, and the Pasuk describes what happens, that there can be a case where she's able to go back to eating Truma. The expression in the Pasuk is that if she becomes an Almona or a Grusha, and the Zera Einla, and she has no children from her husband Yisrael, then she's able to go back to eating Truma. So Rav Chista is saying, the Pasuk is sort of hinting to that. Oy almana, oy grusha, oy zera einla. One of these three things is going to happen. Either she's going to end up being a widow, her husband's going to pass away, or that she's going to end up getting divorced, or that they're not going to have any children. That's what we mean, that if Yisrael marries a Bas Koyin, it doesn't work out well. With the provisions that the Gemara is going to say soon. Wait. The Masnisa Tana, in a Braisa, we learn a little bit differently. Koivra, either what happens is he ends up burying her, in other words, she dies young, oi koivautoi, or she buries him, he ends up dying young, oi meviatu lideamius, or being married to her causes him, the Yisrael, to become poor. So whatever it is, the point is, if a Yisrael marries the Bas Koyin, then we can't consider that a Sudas Mitzvah. And that means, in other words, when we said Lechol Sudas Erisin Beveis Chomiv, that would mean provided that it's not a Bas Koyin the Yisrael, a Bas Koyin the Yisrael. However, the Gemara asks, Eini, is that so? Rabbi Yechanan says just the opposite. If a person wants to become rich, Yidbach Bezari Shalayim, he should cleave, he should stick to the descendants of Aaron. Kol Shekin Shetoro Kohuna Ma'asharton. Because Adarabba, the Torah and the Kohuna, together, the combination of them, will make him wealthy. Marshall points out, you have the Torah we have Orech Yomim B'mina B'smoila Osher V'chavod, that Torah can bring a person Osher. The Kohuna is also associated with Osher, because we say in particular that bringing the Torah had the Segula to make a person rich, which is why they would always try to have a new Kohen bring the Torah who never had the chance to bring it before, in order that he should have that bracha. So therefore, the combination of Torah and Kahuna is very good and makes him rich. So what do you mean? What is the Braisa saying he's going to become poor?
Smila is like the left.
Right, but still, fine. I mean, it's fine. Weak, but it's fine. We learned
even,
it means even the weaker side, right? And we learned in Erev and fine. It means Lashma and Sholoy Lashma, but the point is, yeah. So the answer is, like Kasha Hobbit Tamad Chacham Haba Amaret. It depends whether the husband is a Tamad Chacham or an Amaret. If it's a Tamad Chacham marrying a Bas Koyin, then it's a good thing. And yes, it's a Shvach and it brings good results. When we said before, Ein Zivugan Ola Yofa, and one of them is going to die young, or they're not going to have children, et cetera, et cetera, that's talking about when an Amaret, when an Yisrael, an Amaret, marries a Bas Koyin. So then, Rashi says, it's a Gnai for Aaron, it's a shameful thing, as it is. In other words, as it is, when a Yisrael marries a Bas Koyin, he's making her lose her status as a Bas Koyin to a certain extent. She can't eat truma, even if her husband dies or divorces her or whatever, she never goes back to eating chaz v'shoyt. So like in a certain sense, he's downgrading her. So if he's a Tamad Chacham, then at least that's counteracted by the fact that she's now the wife of a Tamad Chacham, which is a great thing. But if he's an Amaret, then there's nothing to counteract the fact that he's bringing her down, and therefore we're saying it comes out, therefore there's trouble, right? So again, if a Tamar Chacham is marrying a Bas Koyin, fine, that's a good thing, and it's a Sodas Mitzvah. But if an Amaret is, then not. With that said, by the way, nowadays people are not always nizer in that. First of all, the Chavis Yor has a long tshuva where he deals with all the ins and outs of the question of what is and isn't considered a Sodas Mitzvah. Because the case over there was a person who had made a neder that he's not going to have hanah from any Sodas which is not a Sodas Mitzvah. So now we have to figure out exactly what is a Sodas Mitzvah. So the Chavis Yor talks about if it's a Sodas where they're praising Hashem, then that can still be considered a Sodas Mitzvah even if there's no other mitzvah in it. So even, for example, an Amaretz marrying a Bas Koyin. Besides which, anyway, the Chavis Yor says we don't necessarily have Amaretz of the type that the Gemara is going to discuss over here. We're going to start discussing over here. The Gemara is going to say horrifying things about Amaretz, so we don't necessarily have those type of Amaretz by us. The Tzemach Tzedek points out another thing also, which is not necessarily the Koyinim nowadays are not Vaday Koyinim either. They're only Chezkas Koyinim. So therefore, it doesn't need to be that a person needs to be a real Tamad Chacham in order to marry a Bas Koyin. It's enough, for example, he knows one Masechta. This is the basis of when a Yisrael would get a Levi, would get engaged to a Bas Koyin, the Rebbe would always, well, say Yisrael, you mean anybody who's not a Koyin. So the Rebbe would always tell them to learn one Masechta by heart, even if it's a short Masechta, like Masechta Kala, because that way, that at least fulfills what the Tzemach Tzedek is saying. He's at least a shtickle Tamad Chacham, and therefore it works out, as the Gemara is saying over here. So now the Gemara is going to get into a little bit about this point about Yisraelim marrying a Bas Koyin. Rabbi Yeshua Nosiv Kahanta, Rabbi Yeshua married a Bas Koyin, Cholash, and then one time he was very sick. Omar, so he says, apparently Aaron does not like that I should be connected with his children to have the chasana kiyano, that he should have a chosan like me. One thing is actually Ben Yehoyada says that what he was saying this is sort of like to take away a kitzurug on himself. Like people might think maybe there's something the matter with him, maybe he did averus or something. So therefore we say no. I guess the only reason is I'm not as much of a Tamad Chacham as they think I am or something. But he says actually that I think there were actually gersois of the Gemara over here where it actually says that he recovered, meaning that min hashamayim they showed that he is worthy to be a son-in-law of a Koyin after all. Happy ending. Maybe, yeah, but that's not really Lashon Hara. But whatever. You know, it could also be he might have been saying it also, the Lashon Tema, like Nichalei LaAaron, the Dabek Bezare, the Lahevei Chali Chasona Kiyano. Does Aaron not want that he should have a son-in-law? Like, you know, yeah.
Today that we don't eat truma, does this still hold?
Well, the Koyanim don't eat truma, but they're still Koyanim. But again, the Tzemach Tzedek says, given that nowadays we don't have Koyanim Miyuchasim, then there's less of an issue. So therefore, it's important that the Chasim should be Epis a Tamad Chacham. At least he should know one Masechta, but he doesn't have to be a full-fledged Tamad Chacham like Rabbi Yeshua or somebody. Yeah. On the other hand, Rabbi Idiba Oven Nosef Kahanta, Rabbi Idiba Oven married a Bas Koyan, and it worked out very well. Nafku mine trein v'nei smichi. They ended up having two children who had smicha. Not literally smicha, because they were chachamim from Babel, but it means, in other words, who were worthy of having smicha. namely Rav Sheshes, Breder of Idi, Rav Yeshua, Breder of Idi. So you see that it's, so sometimes it can work out really, really well. And a third example, Amar Papa, Eloi Nasivna Kahanta Loi Yatri. Your Papa says, if I had not married a Bas Koyen, I wouldn't have become rich. Rav Papa, we know in many places in Shas, was rich. So he attributed that to the Schus because he had married a Bas Koyen. And he, of course, was a Talmud Chacham as well. The Smor Loi Shavachavid, yeah. So that's the point. As Marshall said, you have the combination of the Oish of a Chavid from Torah together with the Ashirus of Kohuna that you get from, in particular from the Torah. So yeah. On the other hand, Rav Kahana says, now even though his name is Kahana, he himself wasn't a Kohen, just as you have people nowadays whose name is Levi or not Levi. So his name was Rav Kahana, but he himself was not a Kohen. He says, Eloi Nasivt Kahana Loi Galoi. If I had not married a Bas Kohen, I wouldn't have gone into Gos. In Baba Kama, it tells a story over there how there was a Yid who was about to master somebody. So Rav Kahana killed him because that's what you do to a Moser, to a Moser, to prevent him from mastering. And then Rav told him, you better get out of here and run away to Eretz Yisrael because otherwise the government's going to come after you. So he went to Eretz Yisrael and joined Rav Yechanan's yeshiva, and there's a whole story over there of what happened between him and Rav Yechanan. The point is, he's attributing, why did I end up having to go into Golus, is it has to do with the fact that I married a Bas Koyen. In other words, for him, it wasn't such a good thing. Oh, 1 second. Amrulay, his Talmidim asked him, so what's the problem? Behold, the Mokum Torah Golisa. You went into Golus to a Mokum Torah. Have they go to the Mokum Torah, like it says in Pirkei Avos? He answers, Loi Galoi Kidigali Inchi. Okay, but I didn't go into Golus the way that people usually do. Usually people go into Golus to Eretz Yisrael as free people. They do it of their own free will because they want to go and learn by Rabbi Yochanan and other great Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. Me, I was forced to because of fear of the government.
What's the connection him being about the Bas Koyen?
No, the point is he married a Bas Koyen and he was saying, therefore, Minashamayim. Yeah, he's saying that Minashamayim. Apparently, I wasn't of the caliber to be worthy of marrying a Bas Koyen, and therefore it was brought about Minashamayim that I have to run away from Babel and move to Eretz Yisrael. Yeah.
His family went with him, doesn't
say. Well, not just his family went with him, of course, but yeah. Okay. So we see, in other words, that sometimes it can be good and sometimes not, depending on the caliber of the person. Yeah. Amr of Yitzchak, Kolanen of Sudas, going back to this thing we were talking about before, about Sudas Mitzvah versus Sudas Harashus. So Rabbi Yitzchak says, Kolanen of Sudas Harashus, Lasoy Goyla. A person who enjoys a Sudas Harashus, a Suda that's just made for Rashus purpose, not for a Mitzvah, Lasoy Goyla. In the end, he's going to go into Golos. Shanemah, as you have a pasuk where Amos, the Navi Amos, is criticizing the people of his time, that they're very much into all kinds of luxuries, and they're not partaking zich and learning Torah and everything like they should. And he describes their parties, v'oichlin korim mitzoin, they eat fat, the fattest of the sheep, v'agolim mitoich mardik, and they eat calves that have been fattened up in the stall. Uchdim, a few pasukim later, it says, lochein ata yidlu b'roish golim, therefore now they're going to go into Golus earlier than all the other people who go into Golus. So in other words, because they were too much into their Sudas Rishus and not even bothering to make it into a Sudas Mitzvah. So again, the Chavis Yor says, you can take a Sudas Rishus and turn it into a Sudas Mitzvah. Praising Hashem, say Divrei Torah, yeah, whatever. But they didn't even bother, and therefore the result was they went into Golus.
Those people, Dafke,
more generally, it means the Aseres HaShvatim. In other words, he's criticizing the Aseres HaShvatim in general, that there's this lifestyle by them. Yeah.
Chasim Sofer says that since Rav Kahana killed somebody, Aaron was not with
him. So that's the verge. In other words, even though Rav Kahana himself is a great Talmid Chacham, so he should be of the caliber to marry a Bas Koyen, but because in the end we're saying he killed somebody, even though that guy was a Moiser and Rav Kahana had a right to kill him, nevertheless he's saying apparently there was still a Kitrug Minashamayim, how can a person like that who killed another Yid be married to a daughter of Aaron? So therefore the result was you have to have his Kapara by going into Golus. Yeah. I think that's the Chasim Sofer saying that, yeah. Okay. Talking more about the matter of Sudas Rishus, Tana Rabbanan, Kol Tamid Chacham Amar B'Sudas B'Chol Mokem, a Tamid Chacham who just eats a lot of Sudas anywhere without being concerned whether it's a Sudas, whether it's a Sudas Mitzvah. And we said before that Rav Shimon had said that if it's a Sudas She'enish or Mitzvah, a Tamid Chacham is not allowed to have a Nogmet. So if a Tamid Chacham is over on that, and he does go and enjoy a lot of Sudas Rishus, so Soif Machu V'Sbeisei, he ends up destroying his household because, as we said before, he ends up going into Golus. So therefore, he makes his wife like a widow, meaning Rashi says, because what happens, eventually he gets so used to eating, There's no food available, so he winds up going into Golos and traveling all over the place in order to find food. So therefore, like, his wife is living as an almana with her husband, not home. He also makes his baby birds, meaning his children, Yisoyim, same idea, in other words, because he's abandoning them in order to go look for places where he can get food, and he can't find. He ends up forgetting his learning, but he's not spending the time reviewing it. He's too busy trying to look around for places where he can find a little parnasa. Food in order to parnasa, in order to have food, right? Many machloikas didn't come on him. Rashi says for two reasons. One, because he forgot his learning. So therefore, like, the little bit he still remembers, he gets into discussions with other chachamim, and they end up getting into fights and arguments because he doesn't know what he's talking about. The other thing is that he goes and buys things on credit at stores, and then he doesn't have enough money to pay. So therefore, they end up fighting with him. Nobody listens to him, because like this, before he was a Talmud Chacham and everybody listened to what he had to say. Now, because he degraded himself like that, then he loses that. He calls the Chilul Hashem, because everybody says, that's how Talmud Chacham acts, I don't want to be that way. V'shem Rabbi, v'shem Aviv, and also he makes a Chilul of his Rebbe's name and his father's name, because the same idea, the Gemara tells us at the end of Yuma, that when you have a Talmud Chacham who acts improperly, then people say on him, oy vey to his parents that raised him, vey to his parents that taught him, to his Rebbe that taught him Torah. Nobody should be a Talmud Chacham if that's how people are going to be. So it creates a tremendous Chilul Hashem. He calls a bad name for himself and his children and his grandchildren until the end of all generations. Maihi, so the Gemara asks, what kind of bad name specifically does he get on himself? They call his children the sons of the one who heats up the oven. Like you have, he's always spending time in bars and places like that, and therefore, like, he's the one to stoke the oven and warm up the place so that everybody can go and drink over there. So, like, his children get a name like that. Maharsha says, actually, bar over here doesn't mean the child. It means, like, you have, like, bar mitzvah or whatever. He himself is the kind of person who warms up ovens in the bars and the inns or whatever. Rava says, even worse, they call him bar market de kubi, the son, or the one himself, who dances in the tavern. So, like, not only he just goes and heats them up so other people can come and eat and drink over there, but, like, he himself goes and acts with latsonis over there and dances over there, like people do in bars, like they dance and go and act and, you know, silly or whatever, in order that people should buy them a drink.
What's what kubi mean?
Kubi means a bar. A place where they drink, where they drink. The word kuvi itself means barrels, so where they drink out of barrels. Rapapa says they call him or his children the one who licks the plate, like he's so desperate for food he'll even lick the leftovers in the plate. Yeah, in modern Hebrew, by the way, they use the word malachach pincha in the sense of like a bootlicker, like somebody who chanfers up to people higher than him in order to, so they get that from this Gemara over here.
What's the expression?
In English, you call it a bootlicker, or if you want to be a little grub about it, you call it a tachas licker or whatever. So in Hebrew, in modern Hebrew, they call such a person malachach pincha, taken from our Gemara over here, yeah. That's what we're talking about, Sudas Rishos.
Even a Sudas Mitzvah?
Okay, maybe even a Sudas Mitzvah, we shouldn't overindulge in them, could be, yeah. Rav Shmaya Amar, Bamach Rova, Rav Shmaya says they call him the one who folds up his clothes and goes to sleep. Like people get drunk and they go to sleep wherever they are. So the Maharal explains each one of these things is like worse than the previous one. The first one is like, yeah, he's hanging out in the bar, like he's the one who warms up the oven. The second one is even worse. He's also doing latsonis over there, and they call him like the one who does latsonis over there in order to get a drink. And the third one is they're saying not only that he's so into his tivus of food that he'll even lick the plate clean. And the fourth one is saying he's even worse than that. He acts like a person who has no dignity at all. Like he'll just go to sleep wherever he is. Like an animal, actually. He says Rava, it's like the same word as Ravat, meaning like when an animal lies down. So like he's lost its Tzelem Elokim and becomes like an animal. Yeah. And all of that, we're saying, is from a Talmud Chacham that indulges too much in Sudas. Yeah, primarily we mean Sudas Rishus, but we mean even a Sudas Mitzvah. Yeah, Talmud Chacham should show some restraint.
Make sure
he's got to eat, bring the food home, take the food home.
Fine, he has to eat, but he doesn't have to indulge in it so much. Onward. Going back to the matter of who should marry who. So we said a Yisrael, a Musi, so we said a Yisrael, a Talmid Chacham can marry a Bas Koyin, but a Yisrael, an Amah Oretz should not. And we said in an Amah Oretz, if an Amah Oretz marries a Bas Talmid Chacham, it's no good. And also, if an Amah Oretz marries a Bas Koyin, it's no good. So now let's expand on that. Turn it up on him. La'olam Yimker Adam Kol Mashi Yeshloy. A person should be willing to sell everything he has, the Yisa Bas Talmid Chacham, and marry the daughter of a Talmid Chacham, because the good of it is, she mess a gola, if he should die, or if he should have to go into golos, at least move to chloy, shabonach tamar chachamim, because he can be guaranteed that his wife knows what it means to be a tamar chacham, because she grew up in such a family, therefore she'll be mechanic the children in the proper way that they'll become tamar chachamim as well. But al yista bas amei aretz, he should not marry the daughter of an amei aretz. She mess a gola, because if he dies or goes into golos, bonav amei aretz, his children are going to be amei aretz, because his wife doesn't know better. The Rambam uses the expression that their mother doesn't know keser torah. She doesn't know what the crown of torah is all about to know to be mechanech them to be tamar chacham. With that said, there are achronim will point out that it really depends. That you can have, for example, you can have a person, for example, you have many Bali Chuba, for example. They're not Tamidei Chachamim as such. They're not great world-class Tamidei Chachamim, but they're Yirei Shamayim. They know the importance of Torah. So those are considered, for this purpose, the equivalent of a Tamid Chacham. In fact, there was an interesting point also. There's an interesting point, B'chlal. There's places where it talks about that children of Amei Aretz, we're going to talk about on Amud Beis, actually, that children of Amei Aretz are very low down people, and they have no good midas and everything. But so they ask, the Rebbe mentions in a letter, Rav Moshe Feinstein also writes in one of his Chuvas, I don't know if they consulted on this with each other or if they both came up with the idea independently, but the question was, how are you talking? We say, for example, a person where the mother doesn't go to the mikveh, then the children end up no good. But we see nowadays there are lots of Balei Tshuva whose mothers didn't keep Taras Mishpacha, and yet they're fine yidden. So both the Rebbe and Rav Moshe answered that you have, after all, you have people go swimming, people go bathing, whatever. At least on a most basic Daraisa level, at one point or another, they may have gone swimming or bathing or whatever in a place that at least on the most diebet level would be considered a mikveh, would be considered a mikveh. And therefore, so it doesn't contradict, and then therefore their children come out to be Balei Tshuva and good Jews. So here in a similar sense, that even when we're saying Bas Tamid Chacham versus Bas Amei Aretz, it's more a question of do they understand the importance of Torah versus not.
You don't tell them you have in order to marry. Well, who gives you the money to the father?
It means, in other words, if that's what it costs, let's say, for example, for Stavloinus, like we said before, let's say, for example, the father is demanding, imagine, for example, the father is demanding a large nabin, let's say, or, to put it in modern terms, let's say, for example, plane tickets to go and meet her for the shidduch are going to cost a lot of money or whatever. Nevertheless, it's worthwhile.
Yeah. So here you're saying, what you just mentioned now, that has to do with the first time going to mikveh means every time in between.
Well, so in other words, it would mean each time after, obviously every time she becomes nidah, she has to go to the mikveh. But right, the people swim and then whatever, often enough.
That's that, a shower.
A shower wouldn't work. But no, for example, swimming or going to the beach or whatever, at least, again, on a most basic level, even though wearing a bathing suit and even if it's not, the water is not still or whatever, but even, with a bunch of diebets, one on top of the other, you would never say that. Rebbe actually, I think, mentioned specifically in his letter, he says, don't start publicizing this maybe because you don't want people to start getting careless with mikveh and saying, good, I can just be yotze by going to my local swimming pool. But nevertheless, we can understand that idea. Yeah. Turn it up. Why don't we learn in a braisa? La'olam yimka adam kol ma sheyesh lo v'yisa bas tamid chacham. A person should always be willing to sell everything he has to marry the daughter of a tamid chacham. And also, v'yasi bita of tamid chacham, also a person should be marrying off his daughter to a tamid chacham as well. Moshel inve, when a family of a Talmid Chacham marries into another one, Moshel inve agefen, this is where the words of the famous song come from. It's like combining together, it's like grafting together grapes of a vine with other grapes of a vine. Dover Noah Miskabel, it's a beautiful and well accepted thing. And in fact, you have many times that creates better quality grapes, or if you mix together the wine from two different kinds of grapes, it creates a better type of wine. On the other hand, below Yisa Bas Amah Oretz, but a man should not marry a daughter of an Amah Oretz, because then if you do that, Moshel Inveh Agefen, be Inveh Asneh, that's like combining together the grapes of a vine with grapes from a bush. Dover Kor, it's an ugly thing. The Enem Eskabel, it's not something that people accept. It doesn't work out well. So if you were to, Rashi says, well, show him, like if anybody hears about it, if you were to tell somebody, I'm going to take the juice of these grapes and mix them with the juice of these berries that I got from this bush, they would say, what do you think you're doing? That's not going to come out with anything good. So the same thing over here, it's not going to come out anything good. Turn it up. Bottom, we learned in a Braisa more on that topic. A person should be willing to sell everything he has in order to marry the daughter of a Talmud Chacham, meaning, again, even if they're going to charge a large nadin or whatever. What happens if he can't find any daughter of a Talmud Chacham who's a good shidduch for him? Then he should be willing to marry the daughter of Gdolei Ador, which means it actually says Anshim Maisiv Tzadikim. People who do a lot of mitzvahs, people who, so they may not be Talmud Chacham, but they're Talmud Chacham, but they're Erlich Yishma. Yeah. Loy matza bas gerle ador, if you can't find one of them to marry either, yisa bas roshik nesias, then marry the daughter of a roshik nesias, like the head of a kahila, the pounder of a kahila, the president of the shul, or whatever, they also, you know, they have they have mice and tribe. Loy matza bas roshik nesias, yisa bas gaboritz daka. Then the next one down is marry the daughter of the gaboritz daka, who are also erlecha people, they have to be, because they have to be honest in order to collect and distribute the tzedaka. Loy matza bas gaboritz daka, yisa bas malam de chinoikis. If you can't even find that, then marry the daughter of a Malamed who teaches children. At any rate, the Lo Yisa Bas Amei Oretz, don't marry the daughter of an Amei Oretz, Mipnei Shehen Sheketz, because the Amei Oretz themselves are Sheketz, are disgusting, or Neshe Sehen Sheketz, their wives are like a Sheketz, because they're not careful with mitzvahs, Ba'al B'nei Sehen O'ema, Oru Sheikhen, Oru Kobahema, about their daughters, it's like what the Pasuk says, cursed is the person who lies with any animal, they're like an animal, Rashi says, because they have no heart, they have no brains to understand what the important things are in life. There's many explanations about this, and one of them is that it means, in other words, we're not. Now we have to remember, in the Gemara that we're going to learn over here, there's actually many different levels of Ama Oretz. We're going to talk about some of the harsher levels further down on the Amud, but for example, one possibility is we're talking about where they're doing Averdus Lahafis, so therefore in that sense we're saying don't have anything to do with them. But also another possibility is even if they're not doing Lahafis, you can have, for example, let's say where they're doing all kinds of Averdus without even realizing. In particular, for example, the men are eating various things that are also, therefore we're calling them Sheketz. The wives are not careful with Hilchas Nida, and even a small amount of blood is enough to make them Tomei. Therefore, we compare them to a Sheretz, where even a lentil-sized piece is enough to make a person Tomei, and so forth. So we're talking about that we don't even know enough to know what they don't know, and therefore, like, they don't keep mitzvahs properly, and therefore, you don't need, what are you getting yourself into? So the Torah brings this concept about not marrying a Bas Amoritz, but then the various Noisekalim over there talk about that it's not so simple. That again, maybe we're only talking about if they're doing Lahaches, or maybe we're talking about if they don't really know anything about mitzvahs and they have no Derech Eretz at all. But if they know the basics of mitzvahs and just, okay, they don't know the fine details, then it's not necessarily included.
It brings it back to the person who's ignorant of Torah but acts kindly.
Yeah. For example, Yoresh Hamayim. You consider, for example, let's say the Pasha to Jews in the times of Baal Shem Tov, the ones that the Misnagdim held are nothing, and the Baal Shem Tov was Makar of them. Those are the kind. Those are not like the Amir artists we're talking about in the Gemara over here. They wanted to keep mitzvahs as much as possible. They didn't know all the details because they're not coming to Chachamim, but they're still Erlich Yidden, and they had Yeresh Hamayim, and they would keep as much as they needed.
And the story, their Tillim was music.
Their Tillim is music to Hashem, right? Yeah. Tanya Rebbe Omer, we learn in a Braisa that Rebbe says, Ama Oretz also lechol b'sar behema, and Ama Oretz is also to eat meat. Shenema zois Torah habehema va'oitz. The Pasuk says, this is the Torah of the animals and the birds, meaning kola oisik b'Torah mutar lechol b'sar behema. Only a person who is occupied in learning Torah is allowed to eat meat from an animal, va'oitz, and of birds. V'chol she'ena oisik b'Torah. If he's not occupied with Torah, also lechol b'sar behema va'oitz, then he's not allowed to eat meat of an animal or a bird. Now, why not? Some of the Mefoshim say, because we're talking on a practical level, because he's an Ama Oretz and he doesn't know the dinim, he doesn't know the dinim of shchita, for example. So if he shechts an animal, it's not a bird, it's not necessarily going to be kosher. So therefore, he's not allowed to, because how can he be shechting and how can he be cooking if he doesn't even know the basic dinim? On the other hand, Samar Shah says, for example, so with fish, there's much less of an issue. All you need to know with fish is they have to have fins and scales. That's easy enough to tell, so therefore, there's not so much a problem with him eating fish. There's other explanations, another idea is the Eibishter gave us meat to eat in order that we should have the strength to learn Torah. And if he's not learning Torah, and also, in other words, it represents that a person is higher than an animal, and therefore a person has the right to shaft an animal and eat it. If he's going to act like he's not higher than an animal, and he's an Amoritz, and he doesn't care about mitzvahs, then what gives him the right to eat meat? You know, you have the Pedanics all the time argue, you know, a person is no different than an animal, and therefore how you talk and a person should be able to kill and eat an animal. And from their point of view, they're right. If a person is an animal, then taka, they have no right. Only if a person is a person, then they have the right. And then there's an idea that's brought in a lot of places in Chassidus. The idea, it takes a lot of effort to do birurim on meat, which is why you need shchita and you have all the other dinim with it. So therefore, the Amoritz who's not learning Torah and is not, so he's not doing any of these avodas habirurim. So by what right is he eating meat? So it's just going to end up in shalosh klipas hatneis. He's not going to end up being mevarer in kedusha like he should.
What happens in the midbar that they were not supposed to eat meat?
Who said they weren't supposed to eat meat? They asked for slav and they asked for it improperly, but therefore they gave it to them.
When you shaft an animal, it says.
Oh, yeah, okay. You have that in the midbar. You have it says that if they'd have to bring it to the mishkan. There's machlokes in cholin. Does it mean that there's a day over there? I think Rabbi Akiva. The Rambam passed like this, that actually in the Midbar, they didn't even have to shecht animals if they didn't want to. They could kill them any old way and eat them. But if they wanted to shecht an animal, they had to bring it as a korban. As opposed to after they came into Eretz Yisrael, then you're not allowed to eat nechira, then you can only eat meat if you shecht it, but then you don't have to bring it as a korban. You can shecht anywhere you want meat. Yeah.
So they didn't have bumas around in the...
So in the Mishkan, in the Midbar, they couldn't have bumas. There was only the Mishkan.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Onward.
Mishkan was built. How?
Mishkan was built the second year they were in the desert.
Oh,
so up until that point, yeah, they were allowed to shoot.
That was early in the
30
years.
Onward. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Oretz Mutter L'Noichri Shabbos. A horrifying thing. And Amar Oretz, you're allowed to stab him on Yom Kippur that comes out on Shabbos. Oh, we'll explain in a second what this is all about. Amar Lo Tamidav Rebbe Emor L'Shechdei. So as Tamidav said, what are you using the expression to stab him? Talk about the Shechdei. So he says, I'm using the expression stabbing like as a lotion of even greater gnai. Zeton bracha, v'zeton bracha. Shchita involves you say a bracha. Now you don't say a bracha when you shech the person. In other words, the concept of shchita involves a bracha. Nechira, stabbing, doesn't even require a bracha. Now, what does he mean by this? The Rif says that what we're talking about over here is, for example, an Amoritz who's a roidif. He's actually chasing after somebody to do an avera, to be boil or naira amoros or a married woman or whatever, or to what? Or a zchort. What?
To report to the government.
No, also a moiser, yeah. So those kinds of things, that's what we're saying. You're allowed to kill him even if it's in kippur shachali is b'shabbos. And I think it actually says that the Rif himself, that one time in his shul, there was such a situation where there was a moiser over there and they had to get rid of him and they did that. So yeah.
Whenever time we're going to see him, is it being shul?
Yeah, even if he, yeah. So in other words, so yeah. So that's one explanation. Another explanation is that the Gemara doesn't mean it really. It means it's kind of an exaggeration. In other words, you should realize how low the Amoritz is, that he could be learning Torah and chooses not to, and not to be involved in Torah or Derech Eretz or anything. So therefore, like it's as if he's dead, and like even on Yom Kippur Shachali is for Shabbos, he's Tosfos talks about over here that somewhat similar to the Rif, that we're talking about an Amoritz who kills people and steals and whatever, and therefore he's a real Rasha. We're not just talking about an Amoritz, a person who doesn't learn Torah. We're talking about a person who's a real Rasha and a danger to people. And then the Marsha has an explanation that we don't mean literally to stab him. What we mean is we know that embarrassing a person in public is a little bit like killing him because it causes the blood to drain from his face. So Rabbi Lazar is telling us that you're allowed to do this to this kind of Amoritz, to embarrass him, this kind of Amoritz, who's a Rasha, to do that, to embarrass him publicly, even on Yom Kippurim Shechalis B'Shabbos, especially Yom Kippur, all Jews are supposed to be B'Achdus, but nevertheless, it's an appropriate time to do it because you have to make sure that you have to show him down in public and then make sure nobody thinks to follow in his ways.
And then warn him.
Okay. In the same vein, Rabbi Lazar says, you're not allowed to accompany an Amoritz, to have an Amoritz accompany you on the road. You don't want to travel alone because the danger of bandits and whatever, but don't go together with an Amoritz. Shenema, ki hu chayecha va'urachemecha. The pasuk says, ki hi chayecha va'urachemecha. The Torah is your life and the length of your days. This time ha'oretz, al chayev loichos. He's not even concerned about his own life to bother learning Torah and live through it. How much more so he's not going to have Rachmanos on somebody else's life. So therefore, Rashi says you have to be concerned. Now he might kill. Now he might kill you.
So I'll be much be on him.
Right. Well. Right. So again, we're talking about is again. One possibility is we're talking about the Amma Oretz over here, not just the regular type of Amma Oretz who doesn't learn Torah, but who respects the Chachamim. We're talking about the kind who's a Rosha and is over Lahachas and whatever. You're not really going to be able to have Ashba on him. So therefore, don't go with him on the road because, yeah. You actually have, there's a story in Masechta Nedarim, for example, where it tells how Ula was traveling with somebody to Eretz Yisrael, or with two other people rather, and in the middle, one of them killed the other one. So you have an example over there. In other words, a person has to learn some self-control. A Talmid Chacham is more likely to have that sense of self-control. And a Ma'aretz may not. So therefore, if things get really heated, he may kill and not have the moral compass to keep himself from doing that because he doesn't have, Alderich, like you have, for example, you have a similar thing that Eber talked about in a lot of letters, for example, you know, where people argued, what do you need religion for? You can have morality without religion. And then Eber told them, have you looked at what happened in Nazi Germany and communist Russia? You know, you had a lot of people there who thought it's a very moral, civilized, and technological society or whatever. You see what kind of rituals they did without a belief in Eber. So, yeah.
People walk on the street. There's no different Torah. There isn't a Chag Nisan.
That's a different thing, yeah. But that's
this time, yeah. This time, my heart is walking with you. He can't converse with you.
I suppose there's that also, yeah. Okay. Another horrifying thing that an Amma Oretz, you're allowed to rip him up like a fish, to rip him in two. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchok umigabei from the back. In other words, like then he's for sure not going to live. He's not going to live after that. So again, one possibility is we mean, in other words, where the guy is a moiser or a roidif or what have you. And in fact, one idea is why dafka from the back? Because if he's a roidif and you're chasing after him, the first part you're going to be able to reach is his back. In fact, actually, there's an idea like this. If we're talking about a roidif, I think Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, if we're talking about a roidif here and in the previous one about lemoichroi, then why dafka and amaretz? I mean, the same thing applies if a Talmid Chacham is also a roidif. The din is you have to do the same thing to him. The difference is that with the Talmid Chacham, you can say, even if he's threatening, for example, let's say, I'm going to master, I'm going to do such and such, not necessarily he's going to carry it out. But the Amma Oretz, there's much more reason to think that if he's threatening, he's actually going to do it. And therefore, go ahead and deal with him preemptively. So here, it's a similar kind of thing. So yeah, again, Tosfos says that we're talking about over here, that we're talking about an Amma Oretz, a Rosha who steals and kills and whatever. Yeah. Tanya, with that said, also Ben Yoyada has a bit of a funny thing about it. He says when it means to rip him up, it means do an autopsy on him. It means use him for, you know, after he dies, then fine, use his body to learn anatomy or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Akiva, further on this topic to show what Amma Oretz are, Rabbi Akiva says, Sho Yisi Amma Oretz, when I myself used to be an Amma Oretz, Amarti, I used to say, Mi Yitim Le Tamar Chacham, Va'ana Shechenu Kachamar, if only somebody could give me a Tamar Chacham, and I would bite him like a donkey. In other words, that's how much the Amma Oretz hated the Chacham. Amar Le Tamid of Rebbe Amert Kelev, why like a donkey? The usual comparison would be to bite him like a dog. So he says, because the difference is, Zen Noshach v'shoiver etzem, a donkey, when he bites, breaks the bones also. Zen Noshach v'shoiver etzem, a dog bites, but the bite isn't powerful enough to break the bones. In other words, he's saying, I hated the Chachamim so much that I would have bitten them and broken their bones. Now, why, Taka? So, in fact, actually, Gurion Ashas refers over here to a Tosfos in Ksubas when it tells the whole story of Rabbi Akiva, how he married Rachel, the daughter of Kabbal Savua. It says that she saw that he was sneistic and that he was a tsanua and he had good qualities. So how does that fit with over here that he's so vicious towards the Chachamim? Tosfos says over there what it is he did. He was a tsanua person. He did have a lot of good midas. What it was is, he and other Amei Oretz like him felt that the Talmid Chachamim are very standoffish to them. So they had the idea that the Talmid Chachamim are like what we learn about, for example, the Masnagdim in the times of the Baal Shem Tov, the Alter Rebbe, where they think the Amei Oretz are below us. Now, they didn't necessarily. It could be, for example, because the Talmid Chachamim have to be careful with Hilchos Tum of Atara, which the Amei Oretz are not. But nevertheless, the Amei Oretz had this impression that the Chachamim are like very standoffish and look down on them. And therefore, they hated them viciously, as we have over here. Actually, the Ritva gives a different answer. He says there were three stages of Rabbi Akiva. First, he was such a bad Amei Oretz that even he had no good midas, and he would have been like the Amei Oretz that we were describing before, and he would have even bitten and harmed the Talmid Chacham. Later on, he'd improved his midas, but he's still an Amei Oretz. Then afterwards, after he married Rachel, then he went and learned Torah and became Rabbi Akiva. Yeah. Continuing on this topic, Tanya, Hoyer of Meir Omer, if a person marries off his daughter to an Amei Oretz, which we said before, you shouldn't do, it's as if he's tying her up and putting her in front of a lion. What's the comparison? A lion strikes and hits its prey and then kills it, or Tosafot says maybe he doesn't even wait until it's dead, and then it eats it. And he's not embarrassed. The same way the Amei Oretz hits his wife and then has relations with her, and he has no boshes upon him. He doesn't even wait until she feels better. He doesn't even try to appease her and make her feel better before he has relations with her.
Okay. Based on the example of Rabbi Akiva, you see that it's totally logical to say that you go to rip him apart and kill him, because maybe he's going to be a Talmid Chacham as big as Rabbi Akiva. Who knows?
This is true, and this is one reason why one of the explanations that we said before is we're talking about where he actually is Roidef, or at least he's threatening to be, even Rabbi Akiva. He's saying, if I got a hold of a Talmid Chacham, I would. We never actually find that he was Roidef after a Talmid Chacham, or after any Yid, to try and harm him. If he had been, then yeah, they might have had to. I mean, look, what you have in general in the case of a Roidef, right? If Reuven is chasing after Shimon, with a gun or a knife or whatever, and it looks like he's going to kill Shimon, okay, the halacha is you have to try to stop him by wounding him in one of his limbs, and if you can't do that, then you kill him. You don't say, yeah, but maybe this guy is going to do other mitzvahs later. Right now, your priority is you have to save Shimon, and the Torah tells you to do that. So yeah, with Rabbi Akiva, you don't find him actually a roidif. He's just saying, I would have. Okay. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, il molei onut srichan lahem l'masse omaten, if it weren't for the fact that we need the Amei Oretz for business, because we buy food from them and then they help us and whatever, if it weren't for that, they would kill us. Actually, your mother and a tzrich man could be understood either way. It could mean that we help them, or it could mean that they help us. Whatever. If there weren't this mutual, if there weren't this mutual thing, then they would kill us. Again, we don't mean necessarily the run of the mill Amei Oretz. In fact, we find in a few places in Shas, we find that the Amei Oretz respected the Chachamim to a certain extent. They were careful with certain mitzvot, especially they were careful with certain mitzvot. We have, for example, there's the famous thing that it says an Amei Oretz won't lie on Shabbos, and therefore that if you ask an Amei Oretz on Shabbos whether his food is ma'aser, and he says yes, then you can eat it. So we're not talking about that kind of Amei Oretz over here. We're talking about the lahachas type, right? On the other hand, Tonet Apriya, Kola Oisik Bar Torah, Lifnei Amei Oretz, if a person is occupied in Torah, he learns Torah in front of an Amei Oretz, Kilo Boil Arusas in the front of it. It's as if he's having relations with the guy's Arusa in his presence. Like the Torah is an Arusa, the Torah is like Kiddushin, like the Kala to every Jew. And Shanema Torah Tzivalonu Moshe Morosha, the Torah is an inheritance, but Altikru Morosha Ela Mi'orosa, it's like Kiddushin. So the Amei Oretz feels deep down that he has that same relationship of Kiddushin with the Torah. And then when the Talmid Chacham sits and learns Torah in front of him, then the Amei Oretz feels as bad about it as if like somebody took away his Arusa and is having relations with her right in front of him. So in other words, the vote is, don't just learn Lifnei Amei Oretz, have him join in with you, help him learn with him at his level or something. Don't be like the Talmid Chachamim, the Masnagdim or whatever, and say, yeah, they're beneath us, let's not bother with them, but rather be like the Baal Shem Tov and like the Alter Rebbe and all the other ones who work to bring up the Amei Oretz to the right level. Yeah. Continues the Gemara.
You're saying the Baal Shem Tov also went to Amei Oretz who were Rishayim to bring them to Torah?
Again,
is that what you're saying?
First of all, yes, actually. But second of all, again, we're going back and forth over here between different kinds of Rishayim. The Amei Oretz who feels when you're learning Torah in his presence, Ki'ilu Boril HaRasasi B'Fanav, is evidently not the same kind of Amei Oretz who's being over on Torah Lahachis. Because if he's being over on Torah l'hachas, he doesn't feel that relationship to the Torah. So we're talking about, now we're talking about the more regular, run-of-the-mill Amoritz, who feels bad that he's not, that he doesn't learn Torah. Maybe he doesn't have the time, maybe he feels he doesn't have the ability or whatever. So when you go and learn Torah in his presence and make it like, oh, the Torah is mine and it's not yours and you have nothing to do with it, then it's like, bodo la resosu b'fanav. So the right thing
and
is...
Yet-
So then the right thing is don't do lifnei amaretz, but rather joint help the amaretz to reach that level also. Yeah.
So yet we see that the Baal Shem Tov even extended his Torah to amaretz who were against him.
Because if you can work on them also, then good. Now, again, there's many. Tosfos says over here that there are that digesh harbe in yonei amaretz. There are many different levels of amaretz. So therefore, you have to know which kind you're dealing with at any given time. Yeah.
The Jew
Abramosha. Let's continue. It's getting late over here.
One second. Regarding the Friedrich, the Alter Rebbe, there was a Jewish communist who put him in jail. And what was the Alter?
There were no communists in the Alter Rebbe's times. I think you mean the Friedrich Rebbe. And yeah, okay, the Friedrich Rebbe, obviously he's not in a position to be able to learn Torah with them and help them whatever. The most he could do is tell them that one day you're going to realize and do tshuva, which in fact they did when Stalin ended up arresting them 10 years later or so. Whatever, again, you have to realize which kind of Amma Arutz you're dealing with and work with them on the appropriate level. Onward. Okay. Doyla Sina Shasonin Amir Oris, the Tamil Chacham, Yosemi Sina Shasonin, Okhavim Es Yisrael. That Amir Oris hate the Tamil Chachamim with a greater hatred than the Goyim hate the Jews. For one thing, again, because they're jealous, because they realize that we have the Torah and they don't. So the Goyim are jealous of the Jewish people, realizing that we accepted the Torah and they don't, and they hate us for that. So the Amir Oris hate even more because they realize the Torah should belong to them, part of it is also, you know, you have to realize, again, we're talking many different levels of Amir Oris, but you have the kind who knows that he does have the capability of learning Torah, but for example, he's too lazy to or whatever. So therefore, like he lashes out. He feels deep down, I really should be doing this, but then he feels guilty, and then he takes out that guilt on the Tamar Chachamim. Unashisehen yosemehen, and their wives hate the Tamar Chachamim even more than them. Tonan, we learn in a brisa, Shonu Pirush Yosemikolan, somebody who learned Torah and then left the Torah and then fried out, so he knows, as Rashi says, how much the Tamar Chachamim look down on the Amir Oretz, so he hates the Tamar Chachamim more than anybody else because he knows what's actually going on over here. And again, there's also the fact that he has more of a guilty conscience knowing what Torah really is, and then he abandoned it. But nevertheless, he's acting like an Amir Oretz, then he is. There are six things, that six dinim regarding Amir Oretz. Ein moistrin lahen edus, we can't give over to them edus, in other words, to invite them, we have, let's say, Reuven is borrowing money from Shimon, and we need edim, so we can't have Amir Oretz to invite them, you be the edim, to later on go. Because again, they being Amir Oretz, and Befrat, again, you have some of them, Mefoshim say, we're talking about, let's say, the ones that are Rishoyim as well, they're choshud, that they're going to give false edus, if they have no derech eretz. So the in mekablim mimenu edus, we don't accept from them edus, meaning if they happen to be there, we still don't accept their edus in Beis Din. The in megalim lahen sod, you shouldn't tell them a secret because they're likely to blab it. The in mematan osin apatrupas al yisomim, you shouldn't appoint an amar oretz as an administrator for the property of yisomim because he's choshed on stealing. Or again, so one possibility is, again, we may be talking about the kind of Amma Oretz who has no Midas Toivus, and therefore there's reason to suspect that he might be stealing. It could even be, we're talking about one of the lesser type of Amma Oretz, because it's very easy, you're taking care of money of your sermon. It's very easy for a person to rationalize to himself, you know, I'm doing so much work for them, I'm entitled to a little extra, to whatever, and then he ends up taking more than he's supposed to. So there's that. You don't appoint him in charge of the tzedakah collection for the same reason. And you don't go together with them on the road like we said before. Some say you also don't announce if you find a lost thing that belongs to an Amma Oretz, then you're not obligated to announce it. Now, Tosfos asks, how would you know that belongs to an Amma Oretz? The answer is, Tosfos says, let's say, for example, that you see a bunch of Amir Oretzim passing by, and then you see one of them drop something. You don't know which one it was, but you know all of them are Amir Oretz, so therefore, yeah. So Tosfos says obviously what that means is you can't actually steal from them is because after all, you know, you still can't do that. So that's what Tosfos says, that before, when we said, for example, that you're allowed to kill them and even on Yom Kippur, et cetera, there we were talking about somebody who knows what he should be doing, and he's kofer lahamis. So then killing him is like the korach nefesh, because he's choshed of killing people and so forth. As opposed to here, we're talking about one of the lesser levels of Ami Oretz. So still, though, there's, according to Yesh Oimrim over here, you don't have to return him as lost object. You're not allowed to steal from him, but you don't have to return him as lost object. Vit, what about, okay, so why only Yesh Oimrim, the Tanakama? What does the Tanakama answer to that? He says you still have to return him as lost object because Zimnid Nafik Mene Zaramalia, because he may end up having children who are Erlach Yidin, but Ochelay, and then they'll be able to enjoy it. Kenema Yochin, the Tzaddik Yobosh, as the Pasuk says, the Rosha prepares something, and the Tzaddik ends up, wearing it. So in other words, so you still have to return him as Aveda. He might not be an Erlach Yid, but his son might end up being, and he'll have it. So that's because he's not a Chicha, you don't forgive it, but on the other hand, the Tanakhama says that he may have children who are yet. Okay. So again, I mean, you know, there's many, many different levels of Ami Oretz. Don't go saying this guy is an Ami Oretz, I can go kill him on Yom Kippur, on Shabbos Yom Kippur. You know, you gotta be a little more cautious over here, but you gotta know what the different things are. Yeah, you gotta be a Chacham to know. And in fact, again, like the Chavis Yoreh says, we don't even necessarily have Ami Oretz of the type that it's talking about in the Gemara over here anymore. Yeah. We said in the mission of a chen mishi yotzev achola, we said the same thing as the case where a person left and he had chometz at home, and now it's Erev Pesach. You have the similar thing where a person has psar kodesh and he left Yerushalayim. We had all the dinim over there. And then we said at the end of the Mishnah, how much do you need to go back for versus just to be mevatel the chometz or burn the psar kodesh wherever you are. So the mayor had said kabetza, and Rabbi Yehuda had said kezayis, and then the chum said a kezayis of psar kodesh or a kabetza of chametz. So the question is, lememra, did a mayor sava kabetza or dechoshiv, Rabbi Yehuda sava kezayis nami choshiv? So are you telling me that Rabbi Mayor holds that only a kabetza is considered something important? Rabbi Yehuda would say even a kezayis is important. Or a mini, I have a contradiction. We learn in a Mishnah, we learned in Brachas, ad kamahin mezamnin, what's the minimum amount that a person has to have eaten in order that they should make a mezuman, in other words, that each person is chayiv and therefore is a mazin. Ad kezayis, so the Tanakama, which is Rav Meir, says, if he ate as much as a kezayis, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm ad kebetza, and Rabbi Yehuda says a kebetza. So here it's the exact opposite. In our Mishnah, Rav Meir is saying a kebetza, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying a kezayis. So Rabbi Yechanan says, you're right, you have to flip around the opinions in one or another of these Mishnayos, the opinions were given backwards. No, because in the Mishnah, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are both talking about both meat and chametz. They're talking the same thing. Rabbi Meir says, Zev Zev B'Kabetza. Rabbi Yehuda says, Zev Zev B'Kazayis. So whether it's talking about Psar Kodesh or chametz, yeah. No, so Abaya Omala Olam Le Tekoch. Abaya says you don't have to flip it around. The difference is like this. Hosam Bekroi Pligi, Hocha Besvor Pligi. There, the Machlokas, Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, is based on how to understand the Pasuk. Here, it's based on Svor. Hosam Bekroi Pligi, namely like this. When it comes to eating and benching, they're arguing about the meaning of the Pasuk. Rav Meir says like this. The Pasuk is Ve'achalta B'Savalta Redachta. He says Ve'achalta Zu'achila. The word Ve'achalta means eating. V'Savalta Zu'shtia. When it says you are satisfied, that's talking about drinking as well. Now you have to make a bracha, right? Ve'achila V'Kazayis. And what's the, throughout the Torah, when it says about eating, it always means a Kazayis. Therefore, the minimum amount you have to bench for is a Kazayis. Tosfos says actually this and the next thing are really only a smachta, because midaraisa you only have to bench when you're full, because we take the savata literally when you're full, only midrabanan do you need to bench for less than that. Whatever, so he says that the word achila in the pasuk, v'achalta, implies a kazayis. Rabbi Yehuda sava v'achalta v'savata means achila sheyesh basfia. Rabbi Yehuda holds v'achalta v'savata means it has to be enough eating that you could be full from it. The ezer is ruba kabetza. That would be a kabetza because a kazayis is not enough to fill up. So therefore, so that's the machlokas over there. That's why the mayor holds that. That's why the mayor, based on his analysis of the pasuk, that the savata is not referring to achila; it's referring to a separate thing, drinking. Then therefore, he says you have a kazayis. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying that achalta and savata go together. Hocha b'svara. Here, the mayor and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing based on svara. The Reb Meir Sava Chazarothe Kutumase. Reb Meir takes the view, how much do you have to return for to go back for to burn the chametz or to burn the Psal Kodesh, is Kutumase would be the same amount as far as Tuma. Ma Tum Ose Kabetza, Tuma involves a kabetza. Now we've learned before, Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, whether any amount of food can become tame, or whether you need a kabetza to become tame, but to be metame other food, everybody agrees you need a kabetza. So therefore, the mayor says only a kabetza can be considered important. Less than that, you don't have to go back. Or you can just be mevatel it or burn it wherever you are. So therefore, matumasi the kabetza, afchazarasi the kabetza, just like tuma involves a kabetza, so going back only has to be done for a kabetza. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda holds the amount you should have to go back for is the amount like the Isser. So therefore, so how much chametz is also ma isurei b'kazayis? You're not allowed to eat a kazayis of chametz. You're not allowed to eat a kazayis of a korban that became posel. Or not only, I mean, you're not allowed to eat less than that also, but that's the amount that a person is chayev kores or malchus or whatever for. So therefore, af chazarasi b'kazayis, the same thing to return, should have to be for a kazayis. Tanya, we learn in a braise, said Rav Nosson Omer zev zeh k'shtei beitzim. Rav Nosson says that with both of them, chametz or kodshim, the amount would be the size of two eggs. The Loi Hoda like Chachamim, but the other Chachamim didn't agree with him. We have Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, and we have the Chachamim in our Mishnah that said Psal Kodesh is kezayis and chametz is a kabeza, and that's the halach. So if you have less than a kabeza of chametz at home, and you're on your way for one of these things, then you can just be mevatel the libay as long as it's before the sixth hour.
That's with the meat.
With the meat, it would have to be a kezayis. If you're still within soifim, you haven't yet passed soifim, and you have a kezayis of meat of Psal Kodesh, then you would have to go back and burn it in Yerushalayim. Less than that, you can burn it wherever you are. And if you pass Sofim, also, even if it's more than Kazayis, you can burn it wherever you are. Because the Chum are not Matriach you to return to your Shalayim.
And if you ate less than the Kazayis or Kabetza, and you
eight,
wish
no,
to make...
No, no, wait, one second, one second. Not eight less. We're talking about how much would you have to go back for in order to burn rather than being Mavatol, or to burn in your Shalayim rather than burning wherever you are. As far as
right,
eating,
but,
yeah.
I'm asking as far as eating. If you ate less than a kazayis and you wish to make an after bracha, is it considered bracha batala or not?
Yes, it would be a bracha batala. If you eat less than a kazayis of bread, then you can't make it. Then you don't bench on it, right? Right. Well, you make a bracha before. And a bracha before you make on even a tiny amount of food. But an after
No. I'm talking after bracha.
The after bracha you make only for a minimum amount, right? Yeah. And the halacha is in the case of benching, that would be a kazayis.
Okay, I don't know.